government approves the further easing of quarantine restrictions in Metro Manila and nearby provinces. We'll discuss that with San Juan City Mayor Francis Zamora. Also joining us to tackle the latest COVID-19 data, ABS-CBN Data Analytics Team Head Edson Guido. Meanwhile, Zamboanga City and three other areas placed under modified enhanced community quarantine due to rising coronavirus cases there. The Philippines expands and extends its travel ban to prevent the entry of the more transmissible COVID-19 variant first detected in India. And the National Union of People's Lawyers seeking the immediate release of the so-called Bakwit 7 after charges against them were dropped. We'll speak with a spokesperson of the NUPL Cebu chapter for more on this development. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Hey, thanks for joining us. And for those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, glad you could join us today. The Philippine government eases quarantine restrictions in the so-called NCR Plus bubble. Starting Saturday until the end of the month, the areas of Metro Manila, Bulacan, Cavite, Laguna, and Rizal will shift to general community quarantine, but with heightened restrictions. Now, under this new classification, only essential travel in and out of the NCR Plus areas will be allowed. Indoor dine-in services are also permitted at 20% capacity. Outdoor dining is allowed at 50% capacity. Outdoor tourist attractions are also allowed, but at 30% capacity. Entertainment venues like bars and amusement parks are still prohibited. Religious gatherings and funerals, on the other hand, are allowed at 10% of the venue's capacity. The country's COVID-19 daily case tally has seen a decline in recent days. On Thursday, the Philippines logged 6,385 new cases with 107 deaths. Well, let's get a reaction on the downgrading of quarantine restrictions in Metro Manila. Joining us now, San Juan City Mayor Francis Zamora. Mayor Zamora, good afternoon to you and thank you for joining us today.
Yes, good afternoon, Carmina, and thank you for having me again on ANC.
Right, before we discuss your reaction on the easing of quarantine restrictions, I want to know first, where are we at in terms of COVID numbers, active cases, recoveries, deaths, Mayor?
Okay, here in San Juan, as of yesterday, we only have 267 active cases, and this is really a very, very huge decline or drop, considering that last April 12, we were at 1,226. And if I can just get my data here, we already have 8,194 recoveries and 193 deaths. So we can really see the effect of ECQ and MECQ, and it has really brought down the numbers here in San Juan.
Is this solid enough? Do you think this will be sustainable, that you can afford the GCQ that's going to be implemented?
Actually, during our Metro Manila Council meeting about two or three nights ago, we were presented the data. Actually, the first one was the DOH. They presented our current health status, our hospital utilization rate. And next was the NEDA. They presented our economic status at this point. And seeing the numbers, I voted for GCQ, given the fact that the numbers have really declined and the economy really has to restart once again, but in a gradual manner. That is why the mayors agreed to a stricter GCQ. And this means that the GCQ status will be really just GCQ, because what happened before was the GCQ becomes a hybrid GCQ. They keep on adding additional industries, businesses. They increase operational capacity. Thus, it becomes a relaxed form of GCQ. So we are hoping that whatever the DTI or the IATF will come out with in terms of allowable businesses and industries, these will remain really within the non-risk activities. And with the list that I have seen initially, so far, I agree to all of these. The indoor dining has increased. to 20%. Alfresco dining has remained at 50%, and personal care services, as mentioned, stays at 30% for as long as these services do not require the masks to be removed.
Now, we've seen this time and again, increased mobility has shown an increase in cases. What are you going to do to make sure that those numbers remain the same or even decline and won't spike again here?
Carmina, remember that for most part of 2020, even during the Christmas season, we were under GCQ, and yet we were able to sustain a very low number. In fact, here in San Juan, we were just playing around 100 active cases a day. In fact, we brought that down to as low as 30 last February in spite of being under GCQ. So it really means one thing. For as long as people adhere to all the minimum health standards, very, very basic wearing of masks, face shields, social distancing, avoiding crowds, trying to avoid also as much as possible indoor areas. These really help in bringing down the cases. So now that we've brought them down to this level, we really have to sustain it by adhering strictly to all minimum health standards.
So no big adjustment on the part of the city government in terms of governance now that we're easing into GCQ?
Not really, Carmina, because we're just going back to where we were a few months ago. But we really have to strictly monitor these business establishments, because once they start cheating on these and allowing increased operational capacity, well, one, definitely we have all the authority to close them down. Next, if they continue doing these will eventually cause an increase in the number of active cases. So we just strictly monitor all business establishments. We have a task force that really goes around our commercial areas to ensure the compliance of businesses.
All right. So give us a clearer picture here. When you say these business establishments are going to be strictly monitored, meaning every single day at any given time, you have the members of this task force going around and checking, Mayor?
Yes, we have what you call the task force disciplina. It's a composite team of the police and also City Hall employees and also parts of our business permits and licensing office. So we do surprise checks. And in fact, I also go around myself. And every time I, for instance, I enter an establishment, I really check on the operational capacity, if they are compliant to whatever the IA is requiring. So all of these really help ensure the compliance of businesses to our regulations.
How much has the city lost in revenue due to the restrictions that we've been seeing, and what are your expectations now that we are easing into this also stricter form of GCQ? Mayor?
Carmina, just to give you also an idea, our budget for last year for the entire city government was 2.5 billion. And because a lot of businesses were closed last year, in fact, even if they opened, very sparingly. So we had to bring down our budget to just 2.2 billion for 2021. So that's already a 300 million peso difference in terms of the budget. So that gives you more or less an idea of the effect of all of these.
And now that you're easing into GCQ, what are your expectations? That businesses are going to pick up right away? Or what do you foresee happening here?
Well, one thing that will really help the businesses or, well, the economy pick up again is the vaccination program. Once a majority of our constituents are vaccinated, this will really help in terms of bringing back the economy. That is why I agree with the IATF in terms of their prioritization list after the senior citizens and persons with comorbidities. The A4 list basically comprises the workforce, the labor force that the economy will need for it to move. And once these workers are vaccinated, then people will now feel more safe in terms of going to the business establishments, going out already. Even they themselves are very hesitant at this point to leave unless they've completed their two doses of vaccines. So all of these will really be essential in our economic recovery, because even if you open up businesses, there are still people who are quite hesitant. Like what we noticed last Christmas. I always use Christmas as an example.
Yeah.
Because last Christmas, people were able to go out of their homes. They were able to go to the malls. But we did not see the usual volume of people going out. And it's because a lot of them still hesitate. They'd rather stay home. They'd rather be careful. So in the coming months, the number of vaccinees will be a big factor.
Okay, we're going to talk about the vaccination rollout in San Juan in a bit. But first, I want to check in on the situation in both the private and public hospital in the city of San Juan. Where are we in terms of capacities there?
The Cardinal Santos Medical Center is just down to 75% capacity in terms of their ICU and 70% in the isolation rooms. And this is a huge decline because just a few weeks ago, or possibly a month or two ago, they were really full.
Yeah.
And when I say full, the people, even in the ERs, even in the receiving tents outside for COVID-19, they were really full. So the fact that the percentage has declined shows that indeed the numbers are going down. For our San Juan Medical Center, we are just down to about 45% occupancy at this point. So even our quarantine facilities are just down to 30 to 35% utilization at this point. So we can really see that the numbers have gone down.
Okay, on to the vaccines. Mayor, just the past couple of weeks, we saw the vaccines coming in. How many are you able to vaccinate now each day for both the first and second doses? Go ahead, Mayor.
Okay, we have vaccinated a total of 14,867 as of yesterday in terms of the first dose. Now, for the second dose, it really depends when their schedules are because these vary between vaccines. AstraZeneca has a 6 to 12-week gap. Sinovac has a 28 to 32-day gap, and Pfizer has a 21-day gap. So the second doses really vary. But we received 11,700 doses of Pfizer just 3 days ago, 12,000 doses of AstraZeneca, and 10,000 doses of Sinovac. So all in all, these vaccines will really help speed up our rollout because prior to the arrival of these vaccines, we were only doing 600 to 800 a day. And now we have increased that to 1,500 a day. And I believe we can further increase that to 2,000 in the coming days. Pfizer has a more sensitive procedure in terms of preparation. In fact, I observed it myself 3 days ago when we launched it here in San Juan. So it's not something that we should rush because it's a more complicated procedure.
No wastage, Mayor?
Nope, not at all. We're very, very careful. I always tell my team that we treat the vaccines as gold. These are very, very precious, and we should not waste a single dose. So what we do, Carmina, we have an expected number of people who arrive every day. And if ever there are slots that are not used simply because those who expected to arrive did not show up, we already have a quick substitution list. And these people are just within the area. Now, it's similar to a chance passenger in the airport waiting for some passengers not to show up. So we already have a list of these people. And immediately at around 3 or 4 p.m., once we see that the expected number did not arrive, we text them immediately. So far, we have not experienced any wastage.
Okay. Finally, I want to talk about hesitancy here and even failure to show up, because there are a lot of factors when you talk about these two. I was talking to Valenzuela Mayor Rex Gachalian a couple of weeks back, and he did say there are some senior citizens who are not able to go for one reason or another. Either they're hesitant, or either they just don't know how to register and to bring themselves to the vaccination site. What about in San Juan? What is your experience? Do you have those who register really show up? And what are the reasons that they're giving for not being to, number one, register in the first place and not showing up on the second place? Go ahead, Mayor.
What we're experiencing now, since we have basically three vaccines, some really have certain preferences. For instance, not everyone wants Pfizer because they feel that they might have
the blood clots,
the common fevers, the common soreness in the vaccination area, for instance, in the arm, because the actual vaccine of Pfizer is thicker compared to Sinovac and AstraZeneca. So some people experience soreness. So okay. There are some who prefer Sinovac because it's the traditional method of the inactivated virus. Okay. Some people prefer AstraZeneca. So right now we are finishing our Pfizer vaccines because we have only been given a few days by the DOH to consume the 5,850 first doses. Hmm. So for instance, a vaccine arrives our vaccination center, we already informed them that it's Pfizer. So if they don't want Pfizer, they schedule for another day for the other vaccines.
But are you able to cross-check based on your database, meaning all the senior citizens on your database have already been registered or at least in the process of getting registered? Are you able to do that, or are you just waiting for them to show up?
We have, based on our database, we have about 12,000 senior citizens, but not all of them have registered. And it's possible that some of them really don't want to register. Remember, we cannot force people to get vaccinated. There are still some people who do not want to get vaccinated. That's why we really have to push in terms of educating all of them, informing them about the facts regarding the vaccine. So out of 12,000 estimated senior citizens in San Juan, around 8,000 have registered. That is why we are also coordinating with our barangay captains to help invite the remaining senior citizens to be able to register so that we can already vaccinate them.
All right. And well, based on the numbers that you just presented to us today, Mayor, are we on track? Are you on track to reach your goal in terms of the people that you want to vaccinate in your city?
Being on track is really dependent on the vaccine supply. So now that we have these vaccines with us, we will consume these in the next few weeks. And as mentioned by the IATF, millions and millions of doses will be arriving this May, June, and July. And in fact, we were warned by them that there will come a time that we will just be overwhelmed with so much vaccines. And that is a problem that I like, because what we were worried about then was we would not have the supplies on hand. But now that we have all of these vaccines, we are increasing our capacity daily. And I'm pushing to even reach 3,000 a day once we're able to open two or three more sites.
All right.
So we are on track, Carmina.
Okay, good to know. We're going to have to leave it at that. San Juan Mayor Francis Zamora, always a pleasure talking to you. You take care. Keep safe.
Thank you very much. Take care.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Moving on with the rest of the news today, Zamboanga City, as well as three other areas, placed under modified enhanced community quarantine due to a spike in COVID-19 cases. Zamboanga City in particular has called for an extension of its MECQ period as infections continue to overwhelm the city's healthcare system. Meanwhile, Puerto Princesa has been placed under a general community quarantine along with several other areas. The rest of the country, however, is under the loosest modified GCQ. The Okta Research Group says the number of COVID-19 infections in the country declined by 16%, but it adds the country cannot be complacent. But the city of Puerto Princesa in Palawan now has over 400 active COVID-19 cases. Puerto Princesa has been identified as an area of concern since April, due to a surge in COVID-19 cases. And just this week, the city recorded its highest single-day tally of 121 cases. It has so far confirmed more than 1,300 infections and 28 deaths.
Hindi namin talaga ma-pinpoint saan talaga nanggaling yung surge na ito na nangyayari sa lungsod ng Puerto Princesa. Pero nagsimula ito noong April 5. Na biglang nagkaroon kami ng 9 cases in one day, para sa amin napakalaki noon. Kasi nagsimula kami sa parang 25 active cases noong April 4. Biglang nagkaroon ng 9 na active case in one day noong April 5. Tapos nagtuloy-tuloy na.
the Philippines extends its ban on travelers from India until the end of May to stop the spread of the COVID-19 variant first detected in the South Asian nation. Two more countries, Oman and the United Arab Emirates, were added to the travel ban. Starting May 15th until the 31st, those with travel histories to these two countries within the last 14 days will not be allowed in the Philippines. The country's first two cases of the variant discovered in India are OFWs who came from Oman and the UAE. 41 people have been identified as close contacts, and the health department is currently tracing and checking their status. The variant from India is believed to be fueling the deadly surge in coronavirus cases there, as well as neighboring Nepal. A dangerous infection is adding to the agony of COVID-19 patients in India. Details in this report.
Black fungus is adding to the woes of India's recovered COVID-19 patients. The infection's medical name is mucormycosis, and hospitals have reported a rise in cases of the rare but potentially fatal infection. The disease can lead to blackening or discoloration over the nose, blurred or double vision, chest pain, breathing difficulties, and coughing blood. Some patients lose their sight completely. Gopal's family member is currently fighting the infection.
After corona negative aa gaya lekin 3-4 din ke baad usko.
My sister-in-law recovered from COVID-19. Her result came back negative, and after 3-4 days she had a headache and said she couldn't see anything. We took her to a nearby hospital in the Junagadh area, but the doctor said her treatment was impossible there and asked us to come to Rajkot. Doctors in Rajkot said the fungus is spreading very fast. She needs an operation.
Mucormycosis is strongly linked to diabetes. Diabetes can, in turn, be exacerbated by steroids, some of which are used to treat severe cases of COVID-19. Here's Dr. Sankit Shah from Kiran Hospital.
The immune system weakens after recovering from COVID-19. The patients who had diabetes, who were on steroids during COVID treatment for a long time, or who were admitted to ICUs, this black fungus is detected in them due to their weak immunity.
The Indian Council of Medical Research says doctors treating COVID-19 patients, diabetics, and those with compromised immune systems should watch out for early symptoms. Those include sinus pain, nasal blockage on one side of the face, one-sided headache, toothache, and loosening of teeth. Black fungus is exclusive to India, but experts say it is more common there. The country has a high number of diabetes patients, many of whom have poorly controlled symptoms. Serious cases of mucormycosis could require antifungal therapy and several operations. India has not yet published national data on mucormycosis, but has said there is no major outbreak.
And to the latest COVID-19 data back, President Duterte's decision to loosen quarantine restrictions in the NCR Plus and nearby provinces. Let's discuss that with ABS-CBN data analytics team head Edson Guido. Edson, nice to see you again, and thanks for joining us today. Appreciate it.
It's good to be back, and thanks again, Ms. Carmina, for having me.
All right, so we heard it, GCQ, although a more stricter version of it. Question now is, you know, will this be solid enough, the data that we have? Where are we at in terms of the daily new cases? Are the numbers solid enough that we can get ahead of this virus, Edson?
Well, the country is reporting an average of around 6,400 new cases daily in the past 7 days, and that's 13% lower compared to the previous week. And it's significantly lower compared to the peak that we saw, around this time last month. That's around 11,000 cases per day. So we can attribute this to two things. And first, let's start with the good news. And we saw a decline in the positivity rate. And if we compare our positivity rate now, compared to the first 2 weeks of April when it was at 20.7%. Actually, on April 2, it even peaked at over 25%. So that's one positive out of four people tested. Now it's WHO benchmark of 5% or lower for at least 2 weeks. So yes, things have definitely improved, but the positivity rate remains high.
we are back. You're still with Dateline Philippines here on ANC. We do apologize for that technical glitch. Thanks for staying with us. And still with us now is ABS-CBN data analytics team head Edson Guido. Edson, we were talking about the positivity rate, how you dove deep into the numbers. But before we get into that again, I want to talk about testing. You know, you talk about testing, tracing, and isolate. Those three are going to really pave the way for us to be ahead of this virus. But we do know that tracing is experiencing a lot of challenges as we speak. What about testing? What do the data in terms of testing suggest, Edson?
So I found that after peaking at around 67,500 on April 14, the number of tests actually started to decrease. No, if we look at the daily average number of tests in April, it was at 54,000. But if we look at the first 12 days of May, it was just at 47,000. In fact, testing has yet to exceed 60,000 in a day this May. So we're definitely seeing lower number of tests. And ideally, when your positivity rate remains high, you should actually be testing more. And this is not happening.
So when you talk about the positivity rate, and you gave us a bit of your analysis a while ago, but then again, this rate, this number is only derived from the tests being conducted.
Yes.
So how likely is it that that number, the positivity rate, could actually be really higher if we base it on the number of tests that should be done every single day, Edson?
So the positivity rate is basically the number of positive individuals divided by the total number of tests. So if your testing has decreased, then your denominator will go down, but the numerator will also go down. So in a way, the ratio is not that affected that much. But in this, also, if you're testing less, you're seeing less. Ideally, you'd see a better picture if you're testing more. That's the main point.
Right.
The ratio, in a way, because the denominator goes down and the numerator also goes down, it's not as direct, the effect. Unlike, say, for cases per se, no, that if you test less, then your cases will also go down. But for the positivity rate, both the numerator and the denominator goes down. So the ratio is a little more stable relative to the number of cases.
Yeah, but it's still not entirely reflective of what the situation is on the ground.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Because you're only basing it on the tests that are being conducted.
Yes. And ideally, if your positivity rate remains high, right now it's at over 14%, then you should be testing more because that means that there's still high transmission that's happening on the ground. So the WHO recommended level is 5%. At 14%, we're still three times higher. So it means that there's still a lot of cases that are going undetected that we're missing out on because we're not doing enough testing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's talk about the NCR now. It's seeing a decline in the positivity rate. What are the chances, though, that this will not be sustainable, considering that the nearby areas are still registering a high positivity rate? And also you couple this with a GCQ. Even if it's a stricter GCQ, how do you think this is going to impact on the sustainability of the number that NCR is registering as we speak?
So that's right. NCR, we definitely saw an improvement in NCR. But for now, what I'm seeing is for the rest of May, it's possible that the cases would continue to decline because this will still be the effects of the ongoing MECQ. With the shift to GCQ tomorrow, the effects will be seen at least 2 to 3 weeks after. So that will be around June. But you're right, Ms. Carmina, anytime you relax restrictions, there's always the risk of a surge back up. But the question now is, have we done enough in terms of scaling up our infrastructure? And after a month and a half of ECQ, then MECQ, which definitely helped us buy time, we talked about this earlier, and the question now is, have we now addressed the gaps in our contact tracing? Because if a surge happens in the coming weeks, we have to remember that we're coming off a really high base this time at around 6,000 cases. We have to remember that last year when cases peaked in August, we were just averaging a maximum of 4,500 cases per day. So we're now at a higher level compared to the peak last year. And now that we're starting to reopen, I really hope that our infrastructure is in place in case a surge would happen in the coming weeks.
And there's another thing that I want to talk to you about, and it's not just that the numbers are declining. It's the pace by which they're declining. Edson, how would you explain the fast decline in confirmed COVID cases? What's the explanation behind that?
Actually, for one, we have to remember that testing also decreased. We're no longer hitting 60,000 now. It's always less than 60,000. On some days, we're even less than 50,000. So testing is definitely a factor. Number two, the positivity rate did, even with the lower number of tests, the decline in the positivity rate was quite significant, especially for NCR, because for NCR, the positivity rate before, in the first 2 weeks of April, it was at around 24%. So that's very high. But right now, we're seeing the positivity is around 14%. So that's definitely an improvement. But again, like what I said, at the national level, it's still three times higher than the WHO recommended level of 5%. But at the same time, Ms. Carmina, if you look at the other areas, Central Zone and Calabar Zone, the positivity rates remain high at around 20%. But the one thing that I really want to highlight is we had a package earlier on Puerto Princesa.
Yes.
If you look at the positivity rate of Mimaropa, it's at 50% in the last 2 weeks. So that's one out of two positives. One out of two tests, out of two people tested, one is turning out positive. So that's very high, you know. The region is testing less than 200 individuals daily in the same period. And clearly, this is not enough, as reflected by the high positivity rate. So if you look at their cases at this point, it's still underreported because you have one out of two people that are turning positive and you're just testing around 200 individuals daily for the whole region. So clearly we have to test more in that region.
Okay, finally, I want to talk about the vaccination rollout. Several shipments coming in. I think you caught the tail end of our interview with San Juan City Mayor Francis Zamora there. He's expecting a lot of the vaccines. In fact, he's saying that they were informed that there will come a time that they will be overwhelmed with the delivery of vaccines to their cities. He's even thinking of ramping up vaccination to 3,000 per day. But the last time we talked, Edson, you said that at the rate that we were going then, the target of 70 million vaccinees will be reached by year 2032.
Yes.
With the shipment that's coming in, with the promise of all these vaccines coming in, is it still 2032 or have you revised your projection?
So the latest 7-day average is around 68,000 vaccinations per day. And at this pace, we'll reach the target of 70 million in around 5.6 years. So that's by November 2026. However, this figure will definitely change in the coming weeks with more vaccines coming in. So we're definitely seeing an improvement. But to reach the target of 70 million by end of 2021, the average should be around 590,000 individuals vaccinated per day. From today up to the end of the year. So we still have a long way to go, no? But definitely, I would have, for me personally, I would have wanted to see an even lower number of cases and lower positivity rate plus a higher number of individuals getting vaccinated before we ease restrictions. But if you look at the recent, the release of the first quarter GDP numbers this week, Ms. Carmina, they were worse than expected. But at the end of the day, for me, you can't really fully revive the economy when cases are still high, especially for the Philippines, where our economy is really consumption-driven. So to restore consumer confidence, you just have to contain COVID first. You ramp up testing, contact tracing, and vaccinations is really going to be crucial. And then you reopen the economy. So it's good news that we'll see more vaccines in the coming months, because right now we have 7,700,000 doses. So that's just around 5.6% of the 70 million target. We definitely need more vaccines.
That 70 million target, Edson, has been downgraded to 50 million by the vaccination rollout chief Carlito Galvez. By the end of the year, he's saying it's not 70 million anymore. It's 50 million. How do you think that's going to affect the numbers?
I think it's 50 million, the herd containment by September. That's the target of Secretary Galvez yesterday. And he's still planning to push through with the 70 million target by November, actually, by November of this year, based on his presentation to the president yesterday. So hopefully we get to achieve that But again, the requirement is around 590,000 individuals vaccinated per day. So we're not even at 20% of that right now, because we're testing around, we're vaccinating around 67,000 per day. The latest is 83,000, but it's still, we're still far from the 590,000 ideal target.
Okay, Edson, very interesting what we discussed this morning. But do you know one other thing that we need to talk about is how is the vaccination rollout doing in the provinces? It's been Manila-centric so far, and yes, rightly so, because we see the concentration of the cases here. But here's another thing. Let's talk about that. Maybe next week, how is it looking like in the provinces? So maybe we'll get a clearer picture of what it is like in the whole country. But until then, we're going to have to say goodbye for now. You keep safe. You have a good weekend. Enjoy your rest, and I'll see you next week. Edson Guido there, our data analytics team head of ABS-CBN. Stay safe. Keep safe, Edson. Thanks again. Right, moving on. The National Union of People's Lawyers calling for the immediate release of the so-called Bakwit 7, citing a resolution dated May 5, the NUPL Cebu said charges against the Bakwit 7 have been dropped. According to the group, the dismissal was due to insufficient evidence, lack of probable cause, and for being outside of the territorial jurisdiction of the court. The NUPL represents 6 of the 7 respondents who were among those arrested in Cebu during a raid at the University of San Carlos that happened back in February. Police accused them of kidnapping and of training LUMAD students to become child warriors. Kabataan Party List Representative Sara Elago echoes calls for the Bakwit 7's immediate release. Right, for more on this now, we're joined by the spokesperson of the NUPL Cebu chapter, Attorney King Anthony Perez. Attorney Perez, thank you for joining us today. Welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Ms. Carmina, and to all the viewers right now.
All right. So what was the response of the Bakwit 7 once they were informed that the raps against them have been dismissed?
When we were informed about it, that the resolution was issued by the Davao del Norte Prosecutor's Office, we processed the release. Right now, we're at the Police Regional Office, Central Visayas, or PRO7. We are in the process of facilitating the release. We have talked to several police officers who may be involved in the release of the respondents of this cases that were dismissed.
By the way, when they were arrested, did you file counter charges against the arresting officers?
Yes, I've been asked about it for several times today. However, we could not speak in behalf of our clients yet as to that matter, because we have to confer with them as to their willingness to file counter charges to the arresting officers during the day of the arrest. But based on the turn of events, last February 15, or almost 3 months ago, no, there are circumstances that would warrant in filing counter charges. So the possibility of filing counter charges is there, but we are yet to confirm that with our clients.
Attorney Perez, what does this dismissal tell you about the red tagging efforts on LUMAD schools?
Come again, Ms. Carmina?
This dismissal of the raps against your clients, what does this tell you about the consistent red tagging efforts on LUMAD schools?
Well, we've learned that already, that this is really result of the red tagging efforts, no? The attack on that Bakwit school at the retreat house at University of San Carlos was not an isolated case. It already happened to the other Bakwit schools as well. So I think with this dismissal of the 3 cases, it is a clear proof that those are just trump-up charges. against the organizers of these Bakwit schools, whose only best interest is just to continue the education of these children who are displaced due to the heavy militarization in their areas.
Now, it's been 3 months since the incident happened. How has this incident affected the Bakwit Seven and their right to assert their right to ancestral land, self-determination, education? How has the incident affected everything involving the Lumads okay. and also the Bakwit Seven? Go ahead, Attorney Perez.
Things into perspective, since the raid or the police operation happened 3 months ago, it effectively closed down the Bakwit school that was organized here in Cebu. So it means that, of course, the right of the education of children who were supposedly rescued, as to the narrative, the police, they have been deprived of their right to be educated. As to the respondents, of course, they are living in a difficult situation since they were detained. No? We have seen that, of course, our detention facilities, I think it is a reality in our penal system that these are really full of detainees, no? Due to the limited size of the detention facility. So there is really a difficulty as to their living conditions since their detention. And second, we all know that we're still in the middle of this pandemic. So it is also our priority upon their release that they will be checked properly, no? So that we would know whether or not they have acquired the virus. But I think the most important thing really now is that we're here at PRO 7 since 9 a.m. And I think it's been 4 hours already that we're waiting for the release. We will stay here, no? Until these respondents would be released.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it at that. Attorney King Anthony Perez, spokesperson of NUPL Cebu Chapter. Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. Take care and you keep safe.
Thank you to Karina.
Thanks a lot. All right, some sports action before we go. The play-in cast for the NBA's Western Conference is complete. The Memphis Grizzlies handed the San Antonio Spurs a spot in the mini-tournament with a 116-110 win against the Sacramento Kings. The defeat knocked the Kings out of contention. The Spurs are now locked in as a 10th seed in the West. They will play either the Grizzlies or the Golden State Warriors in the play-in tournament, where 4 teams will duel for the last 2 postseason berths. In the Eastern Conference, the race for the 4th seed turning into a tight 3-way race. The Atlanta Hawks, Miami Heat, and New York Knicks are vying for that spot, which carries home court advantage in the first round of the playoffs. The Hawks currently own the number 4 spot after they breezed past the Orlando Magic 116-93. But the Heat and Knicks also won today. Both are just half game back of Atlanta for 4th place in the East. And before we go, the much-awaited reunion of the Friends cast, well, that's finally happening. Streaming platform HBO Max has released a 30-second teaser for the reunion special airing on May 27th. The one-hour special features all 6 of the main cast in an unscripted celebration of the show's success. The episode was filmed earlier this year on the same soundstage in Los Angeles as the original comedy. The original cast will be joined by some big names, including Justin Bieber, Lady Gaga, K-pop band BTS, David Beckham, and Pakistan's Nobel Peace Prize winner Malala Yousafzai. And that'll do it for today. Thank you for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, Dateline Philippines podcast is on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Playback this newscast too on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe, you guys. Keep it here on ANC.